My name's Chris and I'm Mason's dad. He was born on the 5th of July 2015 at the local hospital.
Can you tell me how you and Danielle met and got together?
Yeah, it was a bit of a while ago now. We was because I was actually with someone before that I went to school with up here. I met her through a friend in Bolton, and we went out just to, you know, just do a club and that. And when I met her, I knew that, I know it sounds a bit cringy, but she was the one for me. And there was something about her that I don't know, I just wanted a, you know, just that family. And because I've been in a long-term relationship, I do like that comfort. And just with her, I just felt something warm. She was kind. And so anyway, I got her number, never really see her because we were come for it. And I told her everything because obviously at the time I just split with my ex and I needed a bit of time on my own to sort of find myself, really, because if someone split, especially because I was young, you sort of, well, I'd never lived on my own or nothing like that. And so I had a bit of time of my own, and Danielle wouldn't meet me because I lived up north, she lived down south. And every time we'd try and arrange to meet, we was busy, or if I said meet, she wouldn't meet me. And I didn't think I was that bad, but she didn't want to see me and that. And then, so about a year and a half down the line, we went for a coffee. And this was down south, and I still had the same feelings for her, and it just went from there, really. We met on holiday with friends, like I took my brother, like my friends and all that, and she went with hers. I see her there, and that was it, really. When we come back, it was from Marbella. When we come back from there, we sort of spent time together, and then she come up to visit only at weekends. And then because her job was coming to an end, she come up full time then, and that was it, really. And now it's been over 5 years.
Tell me what your attitude to starting a family was.
I'm from a big family myself. So as a kid, I would have had kids at 17. People always say, you're ready. I don't know. I'm not even ready now. And I've got, you know, you can never say you're ready. I think what people worry about is the financial side of things. But that was never a problem, you know. It was more, I would have had them at 17, but I knew I'd never really found the one, you know. But with Dan, I don't know, there was something there that I just knew I wanted, and that was it. It was very nerve-wracking because obviously bringing someone into the world, especially that's got you in them, it was kind of a bit of a weird, even now it's a bit weird, you know, knowing that she's half of me and obviously also my son, you know. But I don't know, it's just something that I've always wanted. Like I say, I've got four brothers and sisters. I've got two nephews. I've got so many cousins. Like my granddad was one of 13, you know, that are from a big family. So I knew that I wanted a family. And that was it. I think Dan, because Dan's younger than me, she was a bit, you know, wasn't sure when or how, or, you know. But, you know, we're here now and it's the best thing I've ever done.
Can you tell me about Danielle's pregnancy with Mason? What was that like?
I remember when she told me, to be honest, I was in the cinema watching a film, and she comes in, and I don't know if all blokes can relate to me, you know, she went, can I speak to you? So I thought I'd done something wrong. And I was like, oh no, what have I done? Like, I'm thinking, have I been out? Or do you know what I mean? Thinking, what have I done? Have I left dirty socks somewhere? Or she's gone, can I speak to you? And I've gone, yep, we've gone upstairs. And obviously I was panicking. I was thinking, oh. And she just went, listen, she actually showed me the stick, you know, the, I don't know what you call it, like the pregnancy stick. And I think it's added two lines on or something like that. And I was like, well, I don't know what that means. So she was like, well, it's saying I'm pregnant. And I was like, yeah. And she was like, well, how do you feel? I was like, I'm fine with it, you know. And I think that sort of reassured her that I was fine. I think she was more worried about me. And that was it, really. And it was more, obviously, we didn't know what was going to happen. But yeah, it was brilliant. It was, she had quite bad morning sickness, it's called, but it was like all, you know, all day. But she had really bad morning sickness with him. She'd wake up hungry and she used to nibble on crackers. I can hear her nibbling on a cracker, like a little mouse. But no, it was, like you say, it's one of them that when your wife's pregnant, it's brilliant. Do you know what I mean? Because you get excited. And to be honest, I got all the stuff early. I bought everything early, you know, like, and obviously it was all boy stuff. So I got, to be fair, I do like the neutral colours. You know, I got a few blue bits, but mainly it was all white and stuff like that. And you know, like your browns and creams and that. But yeah, we got everything early, and little did we know that was gonna, you know, it was going to happen to him. But it's, but even till this day, you know, the pregnancy was brilliant, and I know I didn't meet him, but it was brilliant because he obviously knew me, heard me, because I used to always talk to him and play him music like I did to Milena now.
Do you remember what sort of antenatal care she received during that pregnancy? What happened in the hospital with all the people that she saw? Did you go with her for that? Or
yeah, I went to a few, but obviously because I was training and doing my own sort of thing, it was sort of something that I tried to go as much as I can, which I, you know, but to be honest, I didn't know anything. I just thought, you know, especially a bloke, or I don't know if anyone knew about, but after, I think it's like the 12-week thing, we were past that, and I thought, oh, everything's sweet. Do you know what I mean? It was like, then the next thing was to find out what it was. And obviously being a bloke, you always wish for a boy. And I can't remember. I think it must have been like 20 weeks or something like that. We found out the sex, obviously, of him. And it was a boy, and it was like, you know what I mean? It just put the little cherry on top, do you know what I mean, of that. But regarding what she... No, it was just, you know, I'm guessing just your normal checkups. You know, they check if the growth is okay, I think they start checking when it gets bigger, when the lungs and things like that are working. Like you see the heartbeat and stuff, yeah.
And what did you know about stillbirth at that time?
Nothing. Nothing at all. And even my friend, I went to his son's funeral, which was a stillbirth as well. But I still didn't know anything about it. It was something that I've never sort of not heard of. It's just, I guess I never really sort of looked into it or anything like that, because I was so oblivious to it, to be honest. Yeah, that's all I can say about it, really, because it's something that you don't really hear about. You just feel like when they're born, there's obviously been a problem, or they was ill, something like that. Do you know what I mean? And to find out, especially with Mace, that there was nothing wrong. That's the main problem. Not the problem, sorry, but that's the main sort of, I don't get angry about it, but it's the main sort of question mark, the sort of the blurriness of why. If someone said, listen, there was X, Y, Z, or I could sort of, you know, sort of not put it to bed, but sort of feel more at ease knowing that he was ill, or he had this sort of, I don't know if you call that disease, I don't know. But to know he was absolutely fine, and to see him looking like, he was a double of my daughter being born, but just she was a bigger version. You know, he had, everyone, I know they all had blue eyes, but he had black hair, like blue eyes, you know, everything that was normal. And even like the, because this is when it happened that Danielle said it was okay for him to be sort of, I don't know, is it like tested on, or examined at another private hospital. So that's when obviously I had to pay to see what they could find. And it was just nothing. It was basically everything was fine. His organs, his umbilical cord, everything, you know. And that's what sort of I find hard, do you know what I mean? Because like, if I had a choice, you know what I mean, because I've a friend of mine had a choice, because it was the baby was making the mother ill, you know, this, you know, I could have a choice, but this, I didn't have a choice, and I didn't know anything about it at all, and that was it, really. Yeah, I didn't know anything.
When in the pregnancy with Mason, did you realise that something was wrong? Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, we went to Tenerife with all our friends. There was loads of us went over there, and we were flying back. And me and Dan aren't good flyers anyway. Any bit of turbulence, we're screaming. I hate it. I get sweaty. And I think that night, it was a Thursday. We landed. Or it might be Thursday afternoon. Everything was fine. And I woke up Friday morning. So on Friday morning, I went to the gym with my friend to do my workout. But in the morning, Dan was like, oh, at this point, I think, we didn't name him. Dan just went, oh, he's been quiet last night. So I was joking, just saying, oh, he's got jet lag, even though I don't think there's no time difference, but just saying, oh, he's got jet lag, thinking nothing of it, just thinking that, you know, Dan, you know, a lot of people, they have like a little headache and they think it's a, you know, a real migraine, you know what I mean? So I just thought it was over-exaggeration or, so I went to the gym and I had a funny feeling. I even said to my trainer, this was weird because even my trainer talks about it now. I just went, I got a funny feeling. I don't know why. So anyway, I did my set and my phone went off. So I answered it and Dan just said, Chris, can you come to the hospital? I think she... No, she told me she was going for a checkup, sorry. She said, listen, I'm going in for a checkup just to make sure everything's all right. That's when I turned to... And this was about 10:30. And I turned to my trainer. I just went, listen, I'm going to go hospital. I've got a funny feeling. And then literally Dan rings me when I'm pulling into the hospital, just saying, where are you? And in tears. And that's when I sort of knew something had gone wrong. And I just literally slammed my car outside. I know I shouldn't. I just put it outside, left the car, left the keys in it, everything. And there's a lady in the door. And she just said, I'll take it, you're Chris. I went, yeah. She went in. And that's when I sort of, just looking at her body language, that's when I thought, yeah, something had happened. I guess, you know, it's not, don't take us, but I guessed he had passed away, but I didn't. I thought there was a, maybe because of the flight or something like that. Or, but yeah, that was it. And I just remember going in there, seeing her, and it was more a fact of seeing her in that sort of pain, and I couldn't take it off her. Do you get what I mean? It don't matter what I'd done, because like, as a man, like people, men tend to, oh, get all macho and smash up her room, and it's pointless because it don't do nothing. You know, you got to look at it as like, you got a woman here that's in bits. How are you going to support her? And I didn't know what to say. I just cuddled her, you know? And then obviously I spoke to her. I thought I better speak to her mum and dad. So I rung them outside. I went outside. I spoke to him because obviously I was a man. So I thought, you know, it's a man sort of thing to do. And then I rung my family, rung my mum and that, and explained. Well, my mum knew because she's a nurse anyway. And that was it, really. That's, and then obviously that's where you sort of, we went in a room, and that's when they explain sort of what's the next procedure and things like that.
Do you remember what you were feeling at that time?
Nothing, just numbness, just thinking, what the, you know, like a bit dreamy, a bit airy, nothing. It was just like, what the, you can't explain. I don't know, it's weird. It's not like anger, because it was more like confusion, more like, why me? Do you know what I mean? Like, what have I done? You know, there's people out there that, you know, have kids and they rape people. They're paedophiles out there and things like this. And I'm a nice person, and this has happened. I couldn't understand it. And that, and still now I still think like that. You know, you see these families that are abusing kids and things like that. But then someone who's here with my partner waiting to give them a loving home and caring home, and that happens, you just sort of left confused, left a bit confused. And this is when, because I've always... Not I'm religious, but I've always believed in stuff. You know, I've always believed in someone's looking after me, and which I have, you know, I've always... And if I've ever needed it, you know, I've been to church and things like that, and at this point I was questioning everything. I was thinking, well, what have you done this for? You know, what? Because I believe he was in control of it, and, you know, people say things happen for a reason, and I just didn't... Still to now, I don't understand why it happened. I do believe other things happen for reasons, and... You know, you have a path through life, but this, I just, even till now, I just don't understand why. But then one day I'll see him, I believe, you know, one day I'm going to see him again, you know, and that's why I sort of, I put it into a sort of a positive mood that I'm going to see him, and I don't go into a negative, I don't cry, I don't, you know, take my anger out on anything, because I believe one day I'm going to see him, whether it will be 10 years, 50 years, 100, I'm going to see him. And that's how I look at it. I tend to look at it like that, and I'll see him, and that's when I'll have my time with him. And just because he's not here in physical, I believe he's here, you know, in, I don't know what you call, you know, like his soul, and that's here, 100%, yeah. So that's how I try and do, because I'm a positive person as well, so I try and put it in that positive light, and I try and give that to Dan as well. But obviously Dan, it's a lot harder for women to deal with this, a lot harder, because they've had to bond with a baby in the stomachs, and you know, they get that special bond, you know, and that's something that a man don't understand till the baby's out, you know, living. And with Mace, and obviously a lot of other people, you know, as a male, not having that time to spend with them, you know, you do feel a bit, you don't understand everything, what women are going through, even to now, you know, women are different to men. And I don't understand women the best of times. So, you know, through this, it was, it, you know, even now, like Dan will sort of talk to her mum and have the sort of girly chats with, but if she wants to talk, I'm there for her, but I'm not, I tend to try and look on the positives, do you know what I mean? Because if you look on the negatives and you talk about it, you end up banging your head against a wall asking why all the time. And for me, it's not wasting time, but you're just sort of wasting energy that, you know, you can focus on, you know, because he's looking down on us, he's proud, do you know what I mean? He's, and one thing he wouldn't do is you to constantly be sad about it, because I, like I said before, I believe we will see him again. Well, I don't know when that will be, but that's what I believe in. A lot of people don't believe in that, but that's their life, this is mine, so.
Going, can I take you back to being in the hospital, and you said you came in and somebody told you what had happened.
They didn't tell me.
So when you arrived at the hospital, somebody greeted you, and then what happened?
No, they obviously guessed it was me by obviously just slamming my Jeep on outside, blocking the entrance. You know, they guessed it was pretty obvious it was me. And the lady just went, I take it you're Chris. I was like, yeah. Didn't say anything. I just went, where is she? And because you get feelings, don't you? I just had a feeling and gone in there, and I just see her in a ball, you know, like in a, I just thought, oh no, like what? I just got to be there. So I just go and cuddled her. And that was it really. That's when I just knew I had to just be there for her.
And what happened next when you were taken into the room and it was explained to you what had happened? What happened after that?
I think we went in there and it was still shocked, because even Dan was like, no, to be fair, it was me. I said to the midwife, I said, you sure? Like, are you sure? Like, he stopped breathing. I said, can't you get the machine? Because, you know, he might be, because, you know, sometimes you go for scans and they look and they can't find, he'd be, oh, he's a bugger now, you know, or she, or, you know. I just said, well, are you sure? Like, are you sure? Because yesterday he was going nuts, because he was always, even with Milena, they were really big movers in Dan's belly. You know, to the point where you could see it from early, would always move. Even now, like movies, you don't stay still. You know, so, and I just said, and then she went, yeah, and that was it, really. We sort of sat there in silence, and then I think they just said, right, this is what's going to happen. And then we drove home, you know, and obviously we had separate cars. But I drove Dan with me, and we left the other one there. But yeah, it's kind of a blur. Do you know what I mean? I didn't really take a lot of it in.
Do you remember what you did in those days you were at home before you went back to the hospital?
No, it was sort of, I didn't really want to know, to be honest. I just sort of shut myself off. It's not a good way to be, but it's just the way I've dealt with the way I feel. And if I've had problems in the past of, you know, living away from home so young and stuff like that, you know, I've just sort of deal with stuff on my own. And it's not a good thing to do, you know, because you need to be there for your partner. But yeah, I just thought, I don't know, really. You know, I just made sure I was there for Dan, because I didn't know what was going to happen, you know, because when we went to the hospital and stuff like that, because they was explaining that she had to go on, I think she had to go on like tablet things to, is it inducer and stuff, things like that. So I was like, you know, so we sort of checked in. And to be honest, yeah, like, when they started the call, because we had a blessing, the Reverend come in and blessed us before. And then he said, listen, any time he comes, I'll come back. And it was a second tablet that, because they said, listen, the first one don't really, it's the course of three, so that they call that the first one. The first course of three don't tend to happen, it's normally the second. But between the two sets, I think you have to have like a, I don't know how long the gap is, like 12-hour gap or 24-hour gap or something like that. And it was a second tablet. She started going like, Chris is sore now. Do you know what I mean? I'm thinking, oh my God. But then obviously with the gas and air she took, sort of took her, not mind off it, but sort of, she was in pain, but sort of took her, I was the one that had to deal with it. And that's what, you know what I mean? But to be honest, I know it sounds mad, but like when he come out and that, Dan was still a bit high from the gas. And my family and Danielle's family was at my house and they was driving. But like when sort of they'd gone, we've had a bit of time with, this is when we called him Mason, and we had a little, I guess it's like a christening, we christened him. And for the next couple of days, I know it sounds mad, but it was lovely. It was like he was there, but you forget he was dead. Do you know what I mean? It was, I don't know how Dan feels about it, but I thought it was lovely, you know, because it was our first experience of a family. And we'd sit there and he'd be with us, and I know, you know, but we'd sort of forget for a minute and you'd talk and, do you know what I mean? You'd sort of forget and you'd think, oh my God, we've got a family. And then it sort of hits you like, oh, he's got to go again into like a day, forever. And that's what, but seeing Dan, the thing what I never forget is seeing Dan holding, crying on him, saying, I'm sorry. You know, that's something I'd never forget. apologising to him. And don't matter how many times I say to it, to say to her, listen, it's not your fault. But she just, even probably now, she just kept saying sorry, like, and crying on it. That's something that I'll never forget, you know. And it's not, I wish I could have taken the pain off her and I took the blame, do you know what I mean? But I couldn't. And that's something that as a man, you just feel like a bit of a failure because your missus is there crying and that, and you just feel like you're helpless, you know? And the main thing is just sort of just be there for each other, do you know what I mean? And what I try to do is, like, obviously, yeah, it was really hard, but I try to make her smile and try and, like I said, try and put a positive on it because he's still our son. I don't care if he's not here, or he'd be my son till, well, forever, isn't he? So that's the way I look at it. But it's just the sort of looking at your missus like that, do you know what I mean? It was tough, yeah.
Do you remember the first moment that you saw him, what you felt, you thought?
It was like mad love. Like, I just see his head, like, black hair, like, just his little head. I just felt like love for him, do you know what I mean? I just felt like, get off, you know, that protectiveness. But the problem is, I knew what we was there for. Do you know what I mean? It wouldn't have, you know, if I sort of had some gas in there, it might have took my mind off it, but it wasn't. I knew, I was more worried what I was going to see, to be honest. You know, because, like, as a man, like I've said to you, I don't know nothing about babies, pregnancy, I knew nothing. So going into this, when I found out he was 20 weeks and he had died, I'm thinking, I even asked the nurse, I said, listen, because I'm in there, am I going to see anything that's going to really scar me? Because I don't want to see sort of like an undeveloped, like an alien type looking thing, because it will scar me for life. I don't want to. And she was like, nah. She said, this is a, it'd just be small. Anyway, when he come out, he weren't even that small. Like, he was like my arm. I was like, he's a, I know it sounds crazy, but when you see it, it's like a baby. Like, you normally see, like, your missus, like a lump coming out of your missus' belly. But, like, when it comes out, you're just like, oh, my, I can't believe that's in there. But obviously I knew what the, but to see him, I was proud. You know what I mean? Because I know everyone says, like, your kids are beautiful, this and that. But, like, to see your own son and that. And if you said to me, if you could picture your son, I'd say I'd like him, you know, because he was quite, not tanned, because obviously I'm not black myself, but, you know, he had a nice tan, he was dark hair, do you know what I mean? Just what I wanted. And that's what makes me proud, do you know what I mean? It doesn't make me sad. It's just one of them things that, I know it sounds hard, but you just got to deal with it, you know, not in the say, like, you just got to, I don't know how to explain it, like, you just got to sort of, not accept it, but you have to learn to live with it, do you know what I mean? You have to, and there's no nice way of putting it. Because you're either going to bring yourself down, and, you know, I'm sure parents have even killed themselves over it. You know what I mean? And I'm sure if you ask your kid, I know he's not here, but if he could speak, he wouldn't want that at all. Do you know what I mean? He wants you to live your life and you'll see him. And that's the way I look at it. And that's the way I sort of have done since I found that out. But the one thing I do get blurred about is why. Because he wasn't deformed in any way. You know, he was the words were, he was healthy as you can get, you know, so work that one out, you know. And I know obviously other parents, they will know reasons and stuff like that, but for me, I haven't had that, and that's what sort of, you know, sort of makes you think, like, why, you know. And that's what you keep asking yourself, why, but there's no answer.
Were you offered, and did you take up a post-mortem at all? Where they examined his body?
Yeah. That's what I said before. He went to a private place in town. And to be fair, from that, Dan got friends with the people that done it. And, well, this is, I don't know how this is. It was literally, I think, a week and a half, well, I'd say 2 weeks later, Dan was pregnant. And I don't know how that works because, you know, and then that pregnancy was, like, crazy. And to be fair, I didn't like it at all. But from that process with Mace, Dan got friends with all the people at the hospital, you know, like on the ward, not the ward, but like the man and his wife that like looked at Mace, got friends with him, and they was doing checkups with her, and it was brilliant. But I didn't realise how much depth you can go in, you know, because obviously what had happened, they was brilliant the way they treated us. But it wasn't a nice pregnancy because obviously the baby would sit still for an hour and me and Dan are sort of panicking, and I pretended that I was fine, but you know, I wasn't, and you know, I didn't enjoy it. But I think now we've come through the other end. I think if we were to have another one now, yeah, it'd still be for Danielle, but for me, I do believe there was a reason why Mace passed, and I just believe they've not found it, you know. So yeah, they were brilliant, the people that done it. They're really good.
Tell me a bit about deciding to get pregnant again then, or getting pregnant again and deciding to try again.
Well, Dan didn't want to really talk about it, to be honest. And it was one day she turned around and she said, you know, the only way I'm going to sort of get over this in a way that I can sort of try and get myself back to me is get pregnant as soon as possible. But I don't know how. I honestly don't. I can't even remember. But I just remember literally about 4 weeks, 5 weeks. Because she did an early pregnancy test. And it said she was pregnant. And we were like, no chance. Absolutely no chance. Because it was so early. You know, from when Mace was here. And obviously she was still even, you know, recovering, you know, from the birth. But yeah, she was pregnant. And that was it. And to be fair, yeah, it was horrible. And I'm sure people can relate to that. Not as in horrible, as in like disgusting, but like a uncomfortable feeling, nervous. And obviously because it's so close to Mace, it, you know, you're still very upset, and you don't want that to affect your baby. You know, your growing baby inside. So that's why I think that's what's helped me now, because I tried to be positive, thinking it's going to rub off on the baby inside Dan. Then obviously we didn't know if it was a girl or a boy, and obviously what Dan had been through, we didn't know what her insides were like, you know, regarding recovery and can we have another kid? Do you get what I mean? We don't want to do this again. You know, there's all these feelings that people go through. But then you look at it and you think, why two or 3 weeks later, she's pregnant. It's crazy. Why? And that's another why that I can't answer, because people try for years, don't they? And they can't get pregnant. But then you've just got to take it. You got to take it in your step. It's what it is, and what's life been giving you. And that's what it is.
Were you, after Mason died, were you given advice by the hospital about future pregnancies or getting pregnant again?
I think they advised her to sort of recover, us to talk. And obviously they offered us a lot of help at the hospital. You know, you're someone you just talk to and that. But to be honest, I'm not a great listener. If I'm not really... I didn't really listen because I didn't want to. Because I just thought, why should I listen when someone's just taken my son off me? And why should I listen to this? Because they must deal with it all the time. You know what I mean? I just didn't want to listen. Like I say, Danielle would know a lot more, and she probably knew everything. But for me, I just switched off, to be honest. I didn't really want to listen. I sort of wanted to deal with it on my own way, which I still am now, but I do it on my own.
So you didn't take up any of the counselling that you were offered?
Yeah, I took up the counselling. I took up a counselling for a bit. But then I stopped, because I believe, like, I'm talking to someone, and then, you know, there's other stuff I need help, you know, because I've lived away from home since I was 14 and stuff like this, and everything built up. I needed to speak to someone in more, not just Mace, you know, because but Mace was just blew it over the edge, you know what I mean? And yeah, I did, but I think the main thing is talking to your partner, you know, having a good, solid, I don't know what other people's relationships are, but me and Dan, it's made us stronger than ever, you know, like, we could, you know, you can do anything. Like, me and Dan could do, and it's silly things, like, you know, you see couples going out and they're arguing because their missus is having a chat to a fella, you know, like little things like that. This is I was never jealous anyway, but with this, it just brings you inseparable, you know, like you can do anything together, it's just sort of, it makes you a lot tighter, do you know what I mean? Gives you that special bond, that because obviously it's only you two that's dealt with it. It's like other couples, it's only them two that have dealt with it. So them chatting to their parents or their mates, yeah, they're listening, but they don't understand. They don't. And to be honest, that's why I don't talk to them. And that's why I don't, like with Dan, obviously she knew, because as a woman, they know him a lot more than us, because they've, like I said before, you know, it's been inside her for 26 weeks. And, you know, so for me to understand Dan's pain, I don't. But I'm honest about it, and that's the best way I can be, you know, because I'm not saying my advice is anything good, but like, I'm just saying my advice is just speak to your partner, and especially for a woman, make sure she's all right. You know what I mean? Make sure you're there for her. Because it's easy for a man, you know, a man will go, oh, I'm going out and go out and, you know, go to the pub and get drunk and stuff like that. And that's the wrong way to do it, you know, because you're isolating your missus then. Do you know what I mean? For me, I made sure my missus was fine. And, you know, for my saying is every king needs his queen, and she's my queen, so I've got to look after her. And that's it. You've got to be there. And for me, I deal with my own feelings and problems on my own. I do that because I've got two dogs. I've got two Rottweilers that I take out every week. They make me think about things, because you go out, I don't know if people got dogs. When you go out with a dog, you think about stuff. And that's what I do. So I tend to walk them on my own. And I think about them and I go on long walks. And also, you know, my foster mum and dad that I live with, they've been a massive help. But yeah, it's all little things. And you need to... my friends I grew up with, because everyone thinks they got friends, but until things happen, you don't realise who your true friends are. I knew who my friends were because I moved away from home. They were boys I grew up with since I was five. And they're still there to this day. And we ring each other about every problems we talk to each other. And there's six of us that are like brothers. And this is when you realise who your true friends are. And people always think they got a lot of friends and they haven't. You know, and having that close-knit family, you know, it's not always blood. You know what I mean? It's a special thing you need. You need a close-knit, I don't know, like a... You call it family, but it's like your friends, you know what I mean? The people you love and you die for, you know, that's what I call. And I'm lucky enough to have that. And that helps you get through it as well. Because obviously, there's sometimes you don't want to speak to your missus about stuff. You want to speak to someone else. But you don't want to go to sort of a counsellor or someone you don't know. You want to go to someone that you trust, but knows you well enough to, you know what I mean? And so that's all I can advise, because, you know, I'm sure there's younger dads than me, but I'm saying I'm still young, you know what I mean? And it's, it was tough, you know, at 29 and stuff, it was tough to deal with. Because even then, I'm still growing up now. You know, and to go through that, I'm thinking, geez, I was expecting a kid, now I haven't, and I've lost him. Like, how do I juggle these things? You know what I mean? Then I've got my missus to deal with, and then I've got, you know, I've got to go out there and put a tough face on for my job, you know, it's difficult because your mind ain't on it, you know? But going through what I went through, I believe that I'm a lot tougher person now. I think things are a lot clearer. And it winds me up when I hear people whinging about things and that don't mean anything in the world. You know, when they're whinging about the weather and, I don't know, I can't think of an example now, but you know, you hear them whinging, you just feel like, oh my God, you ain't got a clue. You know what I mean? You're talking about, you know, stupidness. You know what I mean? Like, and that's when I ain't got time for it. You know, that's when I ain't got time for people. I just sort of pull myself away and I get myself in my own little bubble because I don't want negativity in it. And that's why, you know, I said to Dan, if anyone's ever, I shut yourself off. Because it's like the news. I don't watch news. I never watch news. The newspaper, I'll probably flick through the sport. But I don't read news. And that's not because I don't want to know what's going on in the world. It's just the fact that you switch your news on and I don't know how long news is, half hour, quarter of an hour, and all it is bad. And I don't want to see that. You know what I mean? I don't want to see bad news. I want to see good news. I want to see people doing well. I want to see kids doing stuff and, you know... I don't know, you know, when they're at school doing exams and getting an A, you know, like things like that. And you hardly see that. News is all negative. And for me, I don't like negativity, so I push it out. And I've always been like that. And if it's negative part of my life, I just cut it out. Whether it's a person or a thing, I cut it out.
You mentioned about your friends. Can you tell me about telling friends and family about Mason and what had happened?
Well, like I said, my friends are... my everything, you know, like, so telling them it wasn't a problem. And they could, like I said, my friend, he went through similar before. He was the hardest person to tell. He's older than me, but he went through it. And I didn't realise how bad it was. And that's me being honest, because I went to the funeral, I didn't, I see the coffin, probably still didn't register because I was, you know, I couldn't relate myself to it. And I did say that to him. But like I say, if your friends are your true friends, it don't matter what you say or do, they're there for you. And that's it. And they were there for me. And I can't replay. You know, my friends were there before, I'd say, majority of my family. And that's what I'm saying. You realise things and you realise a lot of people are full of rubbish. You know what I mean? But it's clear for me, I learned very young. I moved away from home at 14, so I work people out very quickly. But for, say, Danielle, she's learned this way, you know, and it's a good thing because she sees good people, you know, and it's not just, we've met a lot of people that have, you know, gone through similar situations that Dan's got very close with, which is good, you know, because you meet good people. But yeah, it was, you do definitely realise who's there for you and who's not.
Tell me about Mason's funeral and how that was.
That was my toughest point of it. That's sort of what really hit me was planning it. You know, sort of Dan did most of it, to be honest, because Dan spent a few days with him before he actually went away, you know, like to, before he was put in the coffin, if you like. And I went in there the last day to sort of to speak to him. And so I had a few minutes on my own, spoke to him and that, and which was nice. But obviously it changed a lot because of obviously, you know, because obviously the fluid drain and stuff like that. And obviously at this point, I think they let him dry out, I don't know, stuff like that. But yeah, it was the actual day of the funeral. All my friends and family were there. But I wasn't really bothered about them, to be honest. It was more of the fact that I was saying goodbye in a way that physical, do you get what I mean? That's what I was sort of, and I didn't, it didn't, everything was all right. Not all right, but I'm saying everything was okay until we got to the cemetery or the, is it the crematorium? We drove to it because I wanted to ride a Harley Davidson in front you know, like with my dad and that. But Danielle wanted me in the car with her, which obviously probably, you know, I should be. But I just thought if I wanted to lead him, do you get what I mean? That's why I wanted to be at the front. And but anyway, I was in the car and it was okay. But the when it hit me was when I actually had to pick him up because I didn't want anyone else touching him bar me. So when I picked him up, it was walking down like the, I don't know what you call it, like an aisle, if you like, or I'm walking him to the where you place him. That was the hardest bit because I had him and all my family behind me. And we had the song, I don't know if you've heard the song, Audrey May, Forever Young. You know, we had that playing as well. And that's why that means so much to me, that song. Do you know what I mean? Like we was walking and that's when it hit me, you know, when I was walking down there and I was thinking, oh my God, it was harder than playing in front of 60,000. Do you know what I mean? Because I was sort of on my own. But I wanted it. I wanted it like that. I wanted to take, you know, I wanted to carry everyone on my back because I've been used to that and I wanted to do it. And that's why I decided, I said to Dan, listen, let me do it because I wanted to do it. And I did it. And that's, and then the funeral, to be honest, was, it was lovely, really nice. Dan picked the music and stuff like that. And we had a few speeches, if you like, and I wrote something. To be honest, I didn't even have to write it, but Dan told me to write it down. But to be honest, I could have just freestyled it because it was exactly, I could remember it now. This is obviously in a different order, but I knew exactly what I wanted to say. It was just about him, you know, I'll see him again. Obviously, I wanted to play football with you and everything what a dad would say to their son, do you know what I mean? That was hard because I choked my throat. It was like someone grabbed my throat, you know, when you get dry mouth. It was like someone grabbed my throat like that and it went all funny, you know, like you've... like you had helium or something like that. And I had to keep coughing and the rev who was doing it went to step in. And I was like, I kept telling him, no, I've got to do this. Do you know what I mean? Because earlier in the morning, I wasn't going to do it. And the woman that looked after me, stuff like that, said, listen, you've got to do it. You regret it if you don't. And I did it. And it was like the best thing I did. You know what I mean? It was sort of just letting him know I'm here and how proud I was of him and how proud he was of me. Do you know what I mean? Because and I know he's not done it, but hopefully my daughter will. It's all I wanted. What he wanted was, especially a son, is to watch me play football. Do you get what I mean? Having a son watch you play football, you know, it's always a special thing. Because more it must be to see your dad playing football, and that's what I wanted him to. Do you know what I mean? But that my speech, what I give, yeah, it was tough. It was hard. But you know, it's one of them things that I know it's a saying and not a nice saying, but you just got to do it. You have to do it. You have to man up and do it. I'm not a fan. It's not I'm not a fan, but I don't believe in sort of, not cowardness, but hiding and things like that. I don't, you know, people were scared and they're frightened because they're out of their comfort zone. But that's what makes us live. That's what makes us people, because you're out your comfort zone and you're excited. It's all different emotions. And without emotion, what are you? You're dead. You know, and that's what I thought, I got to do it. and I was really out of my comfort zone, but I did it. And that's what I like. And that's sort of something that taught me. Do you know what I mean? You know, when I was young, it was Alex Ferguson that taught me this. He just went, Chris, what is Nike? What's the, you know, the what's the logo of Nike? What's the saying? I went, just do it. And he went, there you go. Just do it. Don't think, just do it. And I've always remembered it. And it's something that I can only pass on to people that will know me. Do you get what I mean? And yeah, that was the toughest bit, but it was something that I had to do. It's something that I have to do. And that's, when I believe in stuff like that, it's not that I don't like people. That's the wrong thing to say. But for someone who says, oh, I couldn't do it, I haven't got time for it. I haven't got time for it at all. Because I feel like it's a sort of a coward's way of getting out of it. It's an easy way. Because everyone can say, no, I'm too... For me, you know, it's your son or daughter. And I had to do it. There was no ifs, buts or no's. So I had to do it.
How do you remember Mason now, kind of on anniversaries or around your home, or how do you remember him now?
Well, we've got obviously, I don't know, like Dan's done like a little, it's like a shrine for him, if you like, that I've got my Bible on, what I was christened with. He's got his Bible. We've got pictures, but obviously Dan, like say if people come around, we're not close with, but if I have people come around that don't know or sort of are unaware of it, we sort of turn them around, but they're in the bedroom, you know, we turn them around. And we've got his ashes in like a little heart engraved thing. Because for me, it's tough to say, like, I don't know, because I've never been through this, but because obviously I'm from down south, obviously, but I live up north, but being from down south, when I've been through family deaths and that, they bury them at a cemetery. And for me, I don't like that because I feel like they're going to be cold. I don't know. You know what I mean? It's them stupid things. You know, watch them films and you see all these spirits and that. I prefer him being with me. And that's what, especially be him, one, being young. Two, we're both southern. So say if I was to go down there, I don't want him buried up here. So I just thought the best way to do is put him in that. So that's why we got that. And obviously, I don't know about Dan. I talk to him. It's only when Dan's not here, though. She don't know that. That's a bit embarrassing. I put my music on and we have a little chat and that. Yeah, we always chat. Especially, I know it sounds really weird, but when I've had a drink as well, I'll always speak to him. Just on my own. Like, I was having a drink in the local. It's not like I drink a lot, but when I've been out with the mates and there was no taxi, so I walked back and it's only about 2 miles in town there. I'd just be thinking about him and have a talk. Do you know what I mean? Don't get me upset. I'm just saying, like, I'm here for you. Do you know what I mean? I love you. And that's it, really. Yeah, it's a tough one because you never get no answer. But I always feel one day you might. Do you know what I mean? But, yeah, so that's how we... But regarding, like, on the 5th of every month, it was Dan's idea. We do, like, what do you call them? Like, the big... You know when you light sort of like a little lantern and we write something on it and we lit him off every 5th or normally the 4th at night. Depending on the weather, because sometimes it's windy and it don't take off. Because we did it once, and he set a light to me neighbour's bush. We pooed ourselves because my brother was there and all. But yeah, so the 4th, we sort of lit off lanterns and that. And for his first birthday, we went to a beach in Liverpool that we walked the dogs, and we lit off some balloons and that. And that same beach is where I proposed to Dan. That's when I asked her to marry me, and I wrote it in the sand, and I had the dogs there, and I had my dad was actually there, yeah, my dad was there as well, so that's when I thought that meant something as well, you know what I mean, because of the beach, obviously, with Mace and stuff like that, because we used to go there when she was pregnant, and then it was summer, so we used to have an ice cream and walk through it's brilliant, because it's like a beach, but it's got all like sand dunes, and you can go through like a little, and my dogs love this forest and that, so that's how we do, yeah. Yeah, and that's it really, to be honest. Dan sort of, like I say, women, she'd do a lot more than me because obviously she had a lot more connection and stuff like that. But I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that she does that she doesn't tell me, you know, but obviously she's not told me for a reason. She wants that private, so I don't really ask her what.
Going back to the pregnancy with Milena, can you tell me a little bit more about your feelings through that pregnancy?
Yeah, it was, like I said before, we found out so soon. It was a bit, well, we didn't believe it, to be honest. And because obviously Dan's belly was swollen anyway from the, So we didn't see till, you know, months down the line, obviously the, but yeah, it was not horrible, because I don't mean that in a nasty way, but it was uncomfortable, you know, because the scans, we was going every, I think it was every Tuesday and Wednesday. It was a nightmare every week, because obviously Dan was panicking. So the pit, this is what I was saying, she got such a good relationship with the the private hospital, and she was going there on the week that we wasn't at the hospital that we had Mason at. So it was a scan every week, and it was a nightmare, because you know, you're constantly looking for like bad news, and every week was good news, you know what I mean? But then obviously the elder, she, we didn't know she was a girl till we obviously got the sex test, but looking at her face was exactly the same as Mace. Even now, if you looked at Mace, you could sort of see the resemblance, you know what I mean? And you could, and that's when it got further. But Dan was constantly thinking, like, something's going to happen. But then longer it got, bigger she got. And Dan was, this is what's weird as well, like, Dan was brilliant, because she's a very healthy girl anyway, you know, like, she don't really drink, and through the pregnancy, she never drank at all, even with Mason. She did exactly the same with Milena. So she was thinking, obviously did something wrong last time, you know, so it made it even worse for her, and she was stressing, she wasn't sleeping properly, and then she was still obviously grieving for Mace and stuff like that, and there was a number of things, but that's what I was saying, this is where I try to be positive, do you know what I mean? I try to be positive, and I sort of said, like, Milena's obviously here now, living the life of both of them, do you know what I mean? She's going to be naughty, and she's going to have double trouble, do you know what I mean, in one. And that's why I was trying to flip it on that, to say, because I didn't want her thinking negative, and I don't know how babies work inside, because they must pick up feeling and stuff like that. And I don't want that negativity running into her, you know. But then to see her, you've seen her, she's mad, she's never upset, never cries, you know, she's brilliant, the happiest babe. And I believe that she's living it for Mace as well. So that's how I looked at it, you know. Yeah, but regarding the pregnancy, nah, it wasn't nice. And to be honest, it's not nice for it. It's not nice. It's because you want the baby now. I'm impatient, so I wanted the baby now. I didn't want to wait another 9 months. Do you know what I mean? I wanted her out now. But that's pregnancy, isn't it? You know, that's anyone. You know, anyone pregnant now, they tell you, I want it now. I don't want to wait 9 months, you know? But then the further along the line we went, then she started getting dates of obviously when we can have the, you know, because it'll be a planned C-section, this one, because of obviously what we've been through. And then it was like 37 weeks. And then it was countdown for that, and it was like 6, 5, and you're thinking, oh my God. Then the night before, poor, it was like, I think it was more excitement, because I thought, nothing can go wrong here. Do you know what I mean? We're here. And because the night before she had to go in the hospital, but I wasn't allowed to stay. So I dropped her off, come home. I couldn't sleep. So I ended up just all night watching films, football. Do you know what I mean? It was just like, but like I say, that's why I had to be a man and just pretend everything's fine, babes. You know what I mean? Sweet, you know, like, but then I'd deal with it in my own time, because, well, a man's got to be a man, I think, you know, there's no, and then the night before we took some pictures and that, and, but she just had everything, you know, like, she bought a Doppler. We got given like these heart things for to check on the heart, do you know, all these things, and you're just thinking, oh, mate, it's one thing after another, you know, it was horrible. And obviously trying to concentrate on that, and then my job, my head was all over the place, you know, you don't want to talk to people about it, because they've not been through it, and I understood that, so it's no point in me mentioning it, because you don't want to make people, because it's a lot of awkwardness, a lot of people feel awkward talking about it, you know, and there's that from it, and yeah, and obviously Dan was, it was the worst for Dan, bless her, but we done it, and that's it, yeah.
Tell me about meeting Milena for the first time.
Well, like I say, it was a planned C-section. So when I got there in the morning, I see Dan, we had some toast and that. I don't think Dan was allowed to eat. Or did she have to starve herself? Wherever it was, I had some toast, and they give me some overalls. So I made sure I looked all right, just in case we had a picture, put the overalls on, the hat and that. And this is when now I believe that I had to take control. The same, you know, when you're in that comfort zone. So I just said, I had to take control. Like, as in, come on, Dan, let's do this. You know, everything's good. But I'd be honest, I don't know how women do any pregnant, it's amazing what they do, and I don't know if, you know, probably men don't want to admit it, but what they do is incredible, and I don't think a lot of men can do it. It's incredible what they do, to one, to carry a baby, and two, to go through that birth, C-section, whatever it is. It's incredible. It's incredible. I don't think I could do it. But even Dan, we sat there, she put her overall, and then they had to give her these injections, you know, for her blood, and or take her blood, and that, to give her injections to numb her legs, and the needle on it. I was like, yeah, it's fine. It was about, I don't know, about 4 inches. I was thinking, oh my God. She was like, ah, do it. Come on, do it. You know, and I was just thinking, God, oh my God, it's unbelievable. And then this is when, obviously, they put you go into a bright white room. It's the worst colour to have, isn't it? You know, with all the blood and that, you think it'd be a dark, you know. I was thinking of all the cleaning they're going to have to do, you know, like, because it's so white. It's like a dream. It reminded me, I don't know why, of, I don't know if anyone's seen Bruce Almighty. You know, when it's all, it pretends that they go up to heaven, it's all white. It was like that. It was all white, and you see these people all chatting, and then obviously when we sat down, they put the screen up, and then I had two lads up here, and we all started talking about football. And Dan was like, oh my God, you can't even get away from it in here. So we started, but it got me mind off it. We were joking and that, and then Dan couldn't feel it. Obviously, she had to be numb anyway, but that's when I could hear stuff then. You know, like, it sounded like a water balloon. And it must have been her in us, you know, in the, is it the amniotic sac? I can't say it. The sac that the baby's in. And yeah, I remember it was like a water balloon. And then as soon as it opened, at this point, like, she burst out crying. And that's when I was like, oh, like, Jesus, that noise, you know, like, you're thinking, come on, you're all right. But then, because obviously before this, we got told, because it's a C-section, the baby's not had that natural push to sort of clear its lungs out to get the fluid up. And because she started crying, I thought, oh, she's clean. But then she stopped. And that's when I panicked, because I thought, well, why she stopped? But then she started again. But then it was like a, you know, like when you're gargling water. But then they put her on like a little bed with all these machines. And I'm thinking, oh no. And Dan was trying to look at her. And I honestly thought, well, she probably don't know, but I honestly thought something was wrong. Because I'm thinking, she's not breathing. Like, what's wrong with her? And all the ladies that are around Dan were sort of saying, like, listen, everything's fine. I was thinking, nah, it's not. It's not fine. They're just trying to calm us down. You know what I mean? They're trying to put a breathing mask on Milena, and I'm thinking, nah. And Dan's trying to look through me. I said, listen, she's fine, listen. And you could hear her. Anyway, the bloke said, right, come on. And I went, what? He went, come and meet your daughter. And I said, no. And Paul, but it's the best thing he did, because I went and met her, and she was fine, but she just needed help with the... So they called down an incubator. And at this point, that's when the midwife went, listen, she just needs a little bit of help with her breathing. But she's fine. She's going to go upstairs. So we're going to stitch Dan back up, and then you can go up and see her. So anyway, they're stitching Dan up, and I was with the baby. And at this point, she was okay, but she had like a breathing, like, it's tiny, like a little breathing mask on her mouth. So I'm sort of in my head thinking, come on, babes, come on, breathe, you know. But she just wasn't doing it on her own. And I was thinking, oh no, you can't do that. Do you know what I mean? Because like, Dan's trying to look, and I'm blocking her on purpose. So anyway, they've got the baby in the incubator. Dan's all stitched up. They've wheeled Dan out. And then as I've gone in with Dan, the midwife come out, who was in there, because we got to know her very well, you know, because obviously we were seeing her every week. She went, come on then, come and meet your daughter. And I was like, no. And it was that, she was like, come. So I thought, come on then, I got to, went upstairs. And I was so nervous to meet her. And she was at, and I see her, I was thinking, oh my God. Like, it was a weird feeling, like knowing that she was yours, but you're meeting for the first time. And I remember just seeing her, and I just was like, well, to be honest, I didn't touch her. I just looked. I didn't touch her because, and the midwife was like, touch her. And I was like, no. And literally she plonked me down. And if it wasn't for her, I would have froze. She pushed me down, and she got Amelia out of the I don't know what it's like, incubator thing, and just plumped her on me, and that was it. That was it. And I wouldn't let her go then. That was it. And then Dan had to go through that with me. So I had to sort of, I learned from my midwife what to do, and did it with Dan. Because Dan was shaking. I remember when Dan was okay. And I think it was about, I don't know the time, it was a few hours, because she had to get the feeling back in her legs. Anyway, oh sorry, but when we went upstairs, when I went to see her, she just had one tube on her nose. So I was like, the midwife went, well, can we have, she went, oh yeah, absolutely fine. She doesn't need no breathing. She said she's got a set of lungs on her. She didn't have no breathing equipment, no nothing. It was her food, her milk. So I was like, so that's not, she went, no, that's food, that. She said, look, she's breathing on her own, she's fine. And all the other babies have had these wires coming out. She was on her own. So that's when I was like, oh my God. So she, anyway, so I went and got Dan, you know, trying to tell someone what they've never seen. It was difficult. So I was all excited. And so anyway, we had to wait there. The nurse come back out to check on Dan and stuff like that. And then they literally, it was a few hours later, just went, right, you're ready. And Dan was like, nah. And I said, come on, you come in. So I lifted her. Obviously, she couldn't move. So I lifted her, put her through, and that was it. And then that, it was the night after, because that night we sort of spent a lot, which I didn't understand. A lot of parents, I know this sounds bad, a lot of parents didn't go and see their kids in that room. I don't know why. And that's where I feel like they've not, maybe they didn't appreciate what they, you know, because we've been through stuff. There was babies in there that not even seen their parents. And I'm not one to sort of judge, but I just was like, because I was going around to speak to all of them. So I spoke to all the kids in there, you know, just to say, that didn't know who I was. But, you know, like just sort of saying, listen, you're all right. You know what I mean? And the lady said, why are you doing that? I said, oh, I feel sorry for them. They're on their own, do you know? But all night we was checking on her. And she was on sort of Dan's, you know, breast milk, but it was like sort of into a syringe. And then we started feeding her with that. And then the next night, it was literally 24 hours later, the midwife just went, right, you ready for her? Because she's coming. And I was like, oh my God, no, we're not. But so then that was it, really. That's when it hit us, when she stayed with us. And that was it. You just sort of chucked in at the deep end, really, didn't you? And you just got to deal with it. And then from there, you just, yeah, it's been, you know what it's like having a kid. It's a lot of ups and downs, arguments, but what you've been through and what you've created, you know, it's magic. Yeah.
Have you thought about whether you'll tell Milena about Mason, and if so, what you're going to do?
100%. 100%. There's no reason why I shouldn't. The better, it depends how young you tell them, doesn't it? Because if she's old enough, you could sort of be truthful and just say what happened. But when they're young, I don't know, because she's not that old. But I'm guessing, you know, when you see toddlers and that, they ask questions all the time. And I think the best way around it is to sort of to say, you know, he's in heaven, he's an angel, you know, stuff like that. So, yeah, 100%. And me and Dan will talk about it, but I've got no problems telling her ASAP, because there's, you know, that's me, you know. I've got no problems at all, because I want her to know she's got an older brother. You know, if she does anything naughty, he's looking at her, you know what I mean, like stuff like that. But yeah, I've got no problems telling her at all, yeah.
In what ways do you think Mason has affected your life?
I think for the better, really. I know it sounds weird, but it makes you sort of appreciate things, the little things, you know what I mean? It makes you, not more happy, because that sounds, but it makes you sort of cut a lot of rubbish out, you know what I mean? Like regarding, like I said before, people and stuff like that, and, you know, listening to a load of rubbish and all that. And it's made you as a couple grow closer. As me as a person, it's probably made me tougher for the world, I think, which is a good thing, you know, because I needed it. I needed to grow up, and he sort of helped that, do you know what I mean? It's a special thing as well, you know what I mean? Because he's still my son. I know he's not here, but he's still my son, and no one else has got him, you know what I mean? I have. So that's how I sort of look at it in that way.
What do you think it's important for people to know about stillbirth, people who maybe haven't been through it?
It's a difficult one to sort of say that, because I did it myself. I didn't realise until sort of you go through it. It is tough. It's a tough time, you know, we still, especially Danielle, she's still grieving over it massively. And like I said, I deal with it in my own time, but it's a tough time for, especially the couple. You know, that's what I'm saying. You've got to be there for each other, because it is tough, because you tend to blame each other, shout at each other, argue. And you sort of, you have to get through it. There's no other way about it. You have to get through it. But regarding dealing with it, I don't know. Well, no, not a lot really I can say, really. Unless you've been through it, I don't think you understand. And that's not being nasty. It's just, it's like anything in life. If you've not experienced it, you don't know what it's like. But I think it's definitely, especially the last couple of years, it's definitely become more aware for people that didn't know. And, you know, it's nice that people are sort of showing an interest in it. Because if I'd not been through this, I probably still wouldn't know what it was or understand in depth, you know? So.
Is there anything that you particularly are proud of or regret?
I don't regret anything, really. not saying I've done everything right, but there's no point regretting because you can't change it. But I'm proud of, yeah, how I've dealt with it. I'm proud of being there, being the man, you know what I mean? Being there for my partner, which, you know, I still do a lot of things wrong, but because what we've been through, it swipes all them out of it. Do you get what I mean? But I don't know, it just makes, I don't know if people have had a child after they've been through this. So if they haven't, you know, they've got this to come. But when you've had another child, it makes you appreciate him even more. And I know it's a stupid thing, but I knew I was always going to be a good dad. I knew it. And that's because I was so young, I knew it. Because I'm good with kids and, you know, I just knew. I don't know, you just know, and I knew. But no, I think regrets, you know, everyone, I regret a lot of things, but there's no point regretting because you can't change it. You just got to look at the proudness and what you've done, because regrets is only going to, like you say, make you think negative and stuff like that, and I don't want to do that.
And is there anything you'd like to pass on to other parents in a similar situation?
I don't know about pass on, but all I can say is, you know, just be there for each other and talk. You know, I know I'm not the biggest talker regarding, because I knew I've always dealt with it in my own time, but make sure you, especially for the woman, make sure the partner's there, you know, the man's there for the woman, definitely, because the woman's very, well, they're going through their emotions and stuff like that. And I know we always joke about women because they're, you know, out of, this is a different situation, but, you know, men will always joke about women saying they're at a different planet, you know, they're crazy, this, you know, but, you know, it's very different for a woman, very different, and you just got to make sure you're there for her. That's the main thing, you know, make sure, not make sure she's happy, because there's still that bit, even with Danielle, there's that bit inside her that's always going to be sad, wanting Mace, but I know it sounds horrible, but he's never going to be here, you know, he's never going to be here in person to fill that hole. But just make sure you're always there for her, you know what I mean? You make sure that, you know, as a couple, you talk. Depends how you do it, because a lot of men shut up, like I do shut up. Like, I mean, shut, you know, don't talk about stuff, but make sure, like, you think about it. Because I do, when I go out for dog walk, that's why I dealt with it. Because I believe a lot of people, like some men, don't speak at all. They don't speak at all, and they just, but for me, I'm quite I think a lot, and that's what's made me deal with it.
Is there anything else you'd like to say that you feel you haven't had a chance to about Mason or about anything else?
No, I think I've covered everything. You know, I don't wish this on anyone to go through. but it's like it sounds like I'm echoing, but it's just like, just make sure that you're there for each other. That's the main thing, I think, because there's nothing worse than feeling on your own. And, you know, because I don't know, loads of people have been through this, but I'm sure that people have felt lonely through it and, you know, obviously hurt. But, you know, they've taken it out on themselves and killed themselves or done some, you know, you just make sure that you're there for each other and, you know, you have good support network around you. And I think it makes you sort of, it makes you look at life a lot differently as well. You know what I mean? It makes you, not enjoy, because I've always enjoyed my life, but it makes you sort of live life to the max and just think, you know what, it's too short. That's why I don't watch the news and that, because everyone, all you hear people is moaning and talking negative, and, you know, for me, that's not for me. That I prefer to, if I'm indoors, if the news is on, I prefer to put on, I don't know, a bit of Only Fools and Horses, play a bit of pool or table tennis, you know, I prefer to get my mind off. I prefer to have the fun of it and, you know, because like I said, and I said earlier that, one day I'm going to see him, and I don't know when that is, but when I do, we make up for lost time, and that's how I look at it.